Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. I am Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show. If you've missed any of my shows, you can go back and listen to the archives, the on-demand section. I didn't have a show last week. I finally took a break for once, which is unusual for me. But I have over 70 shows that you can go back and listen to anytime you like. And before my break, I interviewed Josh Mitchell, who is not only a director of Helen Keller Had a Pit Bull, but he also is a promoter. And I think it's really important for all filmmakers to promote their film, and that's the reason why I created this show, is to be an outlet for people to, you know, promote their show and talk about their movie. It's not really a show like Broadway, but talk about their movie and what they have to offer to the world, because that's why we all do this, is to create a story and put it out there. So that's why I created the Indie Streak show back in January to, you know, feature filmmakers. And I've had quite a few on this program, as you can see if you go back and look at all the different people that I've had on board. But like I said, promotion is really important. And Josh, being a promoter of Wicked Pizza Promotions, Wicked Pizza Publicity, he came to me because he kept emailing me. And that's how I got him on the show, because he just bombarded me with emails, which, you know, for a busy person like me, I need that, because if people don't follow up with me, things can fall through the cracks, because I just have so much going on in my life. And I think that's the same case for most people, in whether they're in Hollywood or somewhere else, but they're a busy person. If they don't see that email in front of them, you know, weekly, they may forget about you. So you want to keep on top of that. And that's whether you're a filmmaker or an actor, you want to keep your pictures out there, you want to keep your film promotions out there. And I think that Josh probably also put the interview out there, because we've had a ton of people call in. I'm sorry, a ton of people that have checked the website, that have listened to the show. So that makes me think that he really promoted the heck out of it, which is great. And that's what it's all about, guys. But today I'm interviewing Eddie Duran, the director of 36 Saints, and we're going to find out a little bit about his film, and I think I have him on the line. Okay, Eddie, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for coming on the show. Well, we're going to dive right in. I want to talk a little bit about 36 Saints, and for those that haven't seen it, I want them to know a little bit about the plot, so maybe you can tell us what the film is about.
Well, the film is a thriller, and it derives from Jewish mysticism. Supposedly, God placed 36 individuals to oversee the planet, and without their presence, the world will go into complete darkness. Without saying too much more, that's kind of like the gist of it.
Yeah, and the thing is that they don't know that they're saints. They don't know who they are,
so
it's a mystery.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's just their presence is what keeps everything in line.
This script was so well written, and it's kind of a Shakespearean tragedy, with everything carefully detailed, from the names of the characters to the wardrobe to everything, and it seemed to have taken a lot of research, because you've got biblical references, you have mythology, and I know the writers probably had to do a lot of research. Did you have to do research as well? Yeah, tell
me
about that.
I did the research. I definitely, what intrigued me, well, one of the things that intrigued me the most was the aspect of Judaism and colloquialism. Catholicism in one genre. I thought that was very interesting. And the way they wrote the script itself, because I didn't write it. It was two of the producers wrote the script. And that's what really pulled me in, just the concept of it and the storyline itself was very interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot to play with, in this, for sure.
Definitely.
So did you know Jeffrey and Joey, were you friends, and they said, hey, we have a script, will you direct it?
Well, and I was introduced to Joey by Francis Lozada and Frankie G, who are both acting in the film. And mm-hmm. we also worked on a prior television pilot, which they introduced me to Joey, which I thank them gratefully for that. And that's how I became involved in the project.
Mm-hmm. Now, did the rest of the cast, were they friends of yours, or did you have a casting?
No, actually, they had a casting. We had the second callbacks, but I forget the casting director's name slips my mind. But I was involved in the second callbacks of the actors. So we had a couple, there's like three characters that I had brought in from previous projects. One of them was Gabriel, which is Jonathan mm-hmm. Duran, who also is my son.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah, and I noticed that Jeffrey and Joey were also in the film. Now, was it hard kind of having the writers on the set?
It becomes a little tricky, but I think that the key element is professionalism, which they were very professional in letting me handle their baby, so to speak. So it wasn't really it wasn't too hard. It was something that we sat before the shooting, we did a table read, and we kind of flushed it all out. So when we got on set, everyone knew what direction they were going and so forth. So that helped a lot.
And the casting was, I just looked it up, is by Sig DeMiguel and Steven Vincent, right?
Yes.
Okay, throw that in there. Now, was there any improv involved, or did you guys keep to the script?
For the most part, we kept to the script. Of course, whenever you're dealing with professional actors, me as a director, I always expect them to come with their baggage, with their talent, with their, you know, abilities. So I always give them that freedom. So mm-hmm. for the most part, you know, all the actors did keep to the script. But, you know, I tend to, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, to the letter, as long as they convey, you know, what is written. And you always have to let an actor kind of like do their thing. So that was always part of the process.
Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, you have kind of a collage of sorts of images and voiceover. Was that in the script, or was that added kind of later as an introduction?
That was added. It was conceptualized in the beginning, but we never we didn't flesh it out. It was after the second edit that the producers thought to incorporate that, and I think that really enhanced the story and it gave it a visual of what it was that we were trying to convey within the dialogue, you know. In the original, what those images were actually stated by the narrator, but the uh-huh. images, I thought they were a lot stronger. So that came later.
Mm-hmm. Was that, it looked like you had some found footage in there, like flooding and stuff like that. How did you get images like that?
that was done by the second unit uh-huh. unit photography. So okay. Because there was really not that much dialogue, it was something that could have been handled without my supervision, which was cool. I was cool about that. Mm-hmm. As soon as I was finished, I had to jump on another project. So they had the second unit cover that stuff.
Mm-hmm. And you had some animation work, like with the missile headed to the Earth and the power outage. What type of software did you use to create that? Was that you doing that, or did someone else help you with that?
Yeah, I'm sorry. It was not me. I stick to the directing aspect of it, you know. But all that stuff was done in post. You know?
Uh-huh. Yeah, of course.
In the post process, you know, you have what they call graphic designers, and they come in and they pretty much, you know, go to work on that type of stuff. So I can't really, I don't want to say the wrong thing in regards to how it was created, because I wasn't the one that put that together.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I noticed there was some off-the-shoulder shooting, like with the gravestones and stuff, and other parts of the movie, too, there was some off-the-shoulder work, it looked like.
Uh-huh.
Was that intentional to kind of create a little sense of chaos?
Yes, yes. That was definitely intentional. Izzy with Kia, he was our DP, and we've worked on several projects together. I think we've done about 8 projects together.
Wow.
We go back for about 10 years. And he's the one, he's my go-to guy. He's the one that works with me on all my projects. And we kind of set up the shot list on how the look and the feel of the story, how we're going to convey it. So we did a lot of handheld whenever we had that frantic, you know, feel, that look to it. And it really worked out well.
Mm-hmm. And some of the big parties, like, it looked like a Day of the Dead. Was that actually a setup scene, or was that guerrilla footage at a festival?
No, that was actually set. We set it up. Well, there's two. There's the interior stuff was done in a club, which we set up, and the parade was the Halloween parade in the Greenwich Village Halloween parade. We went out second unit, and we shot the whole parade, and we came up with that footage there.
Was that difficult to do, being that you're just shooting a parade and nothing is under your control?
It was extremely difficult. It really was. But it was fun, you know. And we were out there all night. So let's say of the maybe 3 minutes that you see there, we shot a few hours just to try to get those 3 minutes. And it was hectic, you know, because it wasn't a controlled environment. And it kind of lends to the film. I think it definitely makes it even more exciting, you know, more intriguing. But it was definitely a lot of fun. It just brought me back to that day when we were actually shooting it. And there was a lot of chaos going on. But we did it.
Yeah.
We got it. We got what we wanted, yeah.
And you had a lot of different wardrobe, from the priest to the policeman to the masks. How did you get your wardrobe, your uniforms for the students, all that stuff?
Everett Clark was the wardrobe designer. And he, again, you know, I always let experts do their thing. And he definitely did his when it came to wardrobe. So he, you know, we sat down in pre-production, and we discussed what the costumes were going to look like, wardrobe for the characters, and everything had to kind of, in one way or another, symbolize a saint, because the story itself it pertains to almost like Living Day Saints, you know. So what we wanted to do is just have some kind of biblical symbolism to their appearance, to their wardrobe.
And you had some really great locations. You had the church, the police station, et cetera, club. How did you find all your locations?
we had a great location scout. His name slips my mind, but we did a lot of scouting in New York and looking for specific symbolisms for a specific architect to get to the film. Yeah. And we actually found a friend of mine. He put me on to this church in the Bronx, and the church was actually abandoned, which is the church where, yeah, without saying too much, but it was an abandoned church, and we used that church to do a lot of the scenes in the film.
Which
I almost
difficult.
Was going to say, but I just didn't want to say what was. Say it again.
Now, I was going to say, was it difficult shooting the sound in there? Because I know, you know, when you have a big space like that, there and also in the subway, was it difficult because of echoing?
Well, not particularly. What we want, before the sound, you want to make sure that you have the lighting so we had to make sure that we had sufficient lighting to light the interior of the church. And then when it came to sound, we had a great audio guy, and you know, he again, great professional, and he brings his expertise to the table, and he knows exactly what it is that we want, and he did his thing. Again, I'm so sorry with names. What has happened is that, you know, I don't have my cast, I don't have my crew in front of me. And usually I would, but I'm like on location right now. So I took time off but it's no problem. You know, I'm on break right now. But I apologize immensely for not, you know, if you do have their names, please mention them. So I don't.
Well, you have a huge sound department. You have your Foley artist, which I can't even pronounce that name, Kilyoung Bak. Your sound re-recording mixer, Eric Chase, ADR mixer, Matt Hovland, sound mixer, M. Parker Kozak, dialogue editor, Clint Macro, boom operator, Annie Medlin, and sound designer, Nathan Smith. We got all of this. Anybody that wants the whole list of everybody, it's on IMDb, so you can check that out.
And I thank you for that. I thank you immensely for that. Because it's such a great crew, and they are deserving. People should know who they are. It's an amazing crew, and I'm looking forward to hopefully work with them again.
They obviously did a great job. I mean, the film is just great.
Yeah, they did. They actually did. It was very harmonious, and it was, you know, very well executed.
Now, this is shot in New York. What was the permitting process like to shoot in the subway and out in the street and all these things? Was it difficult?
Well, you obviously have to apply for permits. And we did that. And it's a process that probably takes a month. So even, you know, you bring in your location scout, they go through the process of picking out the places, me, the DP, sound, and the lighting. Then we go, we approve it, and then we submit for the permits, get the dates. So it's a lengthy process, but it's always the best way to go, you know. Especially when you're shooting something like this, with this type of style, you know, this type of look that we were, you know, you always want control. You always want a controlled environment. So, it's a process. It definitely is that.
Is there anything that you would recommend to directors shooting in New York to make the permitting process easier?
Do it early. Do it early. You never want, especially in New York, you never want to find yourself in a position where you didn't get a permit and then you're trying to steal a shot. You can get in big trouble for that, especially here in New York, because of security. You know, before 9/11, it wasn't too much of a problem, but now it for any little shot, get your permits, so then when a cop ask you questions, you have answers, because they can just say, you can't shoot here, and that's the end of your day.
Mm-hmm.
So I suggest you and always, always look. When you find the location, you go straight and find out if permits are accessible for that location. You know,
mm-hmm.
because just because you found the location doesn't always mean that you're going to get a permit for it. So that in itself is a process that can take a matter of weeks, depending on how many locations you have. So that would be the first thing you do before, you know, you want to reserve these locations within at least a month of shooting.
Mm-hmm. Wow. How long did it take you to shoot?
We shot in 18 days.
18 days?
18 days we shot. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was run and gun, you know, but it was so well choreographed because everybody knew what they had to do when they had to do it, which is very important. You want to hire a crew that knows how to work in New York City, which is very different from other places, you know, especially when it's all in New York. I mean, we shot everything except for the second unit stuff was shot in New York.
Mm-hmm. Wow. What do you think was the most challenging part of doing the film overall?
For me, I think what makes a great film is synergy.
Mm-hmm.
When all the artists can bring their best to the table, and in the rehearsal process, you work it all out, you work out the kinks. To me, if the DP has to be just as good as the AC, who has to be just as good as the actors, who has to be just as good as the director, to me, that's what makes a great film. So you have to find the time to work all this stuff out. So you don't have to figure it out when you're on set.
You mm-hmm.
know, the beauty about film is that there is a lot of spontaneous and a lot of serendipity and a lot of improv. So because that's already there, you want to be as prepared as possible so then you can accept those serendipitous moments and capture them on film.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you would have done differently with this film if you were to do it again?
Differently? Wow, that's a great question. Not really. Under the same circumstances, I mean, I'm sure if we had more money, I would have loved to get more helicopter shots and stuff like that, but that wasn't the case. So I can't really pinpoint anything that I would want to do again.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great experience. I'm definitely looking forward to hopefully getting back together with that crew and shooting another part to the saga, you know?
Uh-huh.
And maybe there, well, I'm not, I don't know if there's, I hope there would be a sequel, you know? Maybe Joey, maybe you could put in a good word and then have Joey,
yeah.
You know, put one together. So
yeah.
If there is one, I would love to be a part of it, definitely.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know what the situation is at this moment.
Tell me a little bit about distribution. You know, did this go to festivals? You know, where can people see this? Where is it at?
It went to a couple of festivals. But, again, that question would have to go to Joey. It went in New York City. It went to the I'm trying to think of the name of the festival. The Manhattan Festival. I'm not even sure. I know it went to Comic Con in I believe it's in Las Vegas. No, not Las Vegas, Chicago. I wasn't there. I wasn't able to make those trips. So I'm sure Joey would be someone that could give you in detail answers that I just don't, you know, I don't know.
Okay. Is there a website that people can go to find out more about the film?
Yeah, definitely. It's 36 Saints, the film.
36SaintsTheFilm.com.
36SaintsTheFilm.com, yeah. 36SaintsTheFilm.com.
Okay.
And it's opening in a few cities.
Tell me about that.
It's opening in Chicago. It's opening in Tampa, in Miami, in New York, in Los Angeles. I know there are more cities, but for now, those are the ones that off the top of my head I remember.
Mm-hmm. And I know that Jeffrey and Joey are involved in Teal Poppy, which I'm talking to some of them about next week. Are you involved in that film too?
I'm not okay. Involved, other than me watching it and thought it was a great movie.
Okay, but you have done a lot of films. You did Stone Cold Killers, Grand Opening, Shoe Crazy, a ton of movies. Was there anything that you learned from doing those projects that you changed how you did this project based on your past experience?
Well, to be honest with you, this was my first thriller. So as a thriller, you know, the approach to the film was different. You know, it's a lot darker, so that had to, you know, that comes into consideration, the look of the film and you know, the angles of the shots. You always want to create that tension, mystery, so which none of that applied to any of the other films that I did. So that in itself was a great experience, and just doing the research and the process and learning about how to create that tension, how to create that thriller aspect of storytelling, which is something that now I'm kind of like looking forward to doing it again, you know?
Yeah. What do you think the key is to creating that kind of tension as a director?
As a director, the key is it's a combination of aesthetics as well as performances. You know, you as the director have to guide the actors into putting them in a mindset where they have to be scared. You know, certain things, for me, it's hard to make believe that you're crying unless you're actually crying. And kind of fear is the same thing. You know, you have to have that actor convince you that he's scared, you know. So that becomes a challenge. And great actors can pull that off, you know. So to answer that question, that would be, you know, that element of fear, you know, having an actor convey that and sell it. Cause, you know, you got to sell it, especially with these types of movies. You know, the minute that you see something and you're not convinced, your attention then drifts to something else in the film. And one of the things that I'm most happy about was the cast. I mean, we had an amazing cast, amazing performances.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, you're working on a couple shorts and four feature films right now. You want to talk about, you know, you're on the set right now. You want to talk about that or any of your other upcoming projects real quick?
Well, we're working on a feature film in the Dominican Republic. And it's all in Spanish, so that's exciting.
Perfect.
it's an international, culturally international Latino film where it's kind of action, adventure, love story, We're going into production in November, and we start. We've already started the pre-production process, and we're in casting right now.
Okay.
And the movie is called Machete y Gile.
Machete y Gile?
Translation, Machete y Gile. Translation is a machete and a blade.
Okay. Great. So that's what you're working on right now?
Yeah.
So you're in the Dominican Republic right now?
No. I'm in location. I'm doing a small shoot right now, but it's not a feature film.
Okay. You're doing your short right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, not a short. I'm doing a project. I'm sorry. I'm doing it. It's kind of like a promotional piece that we're doing for a company, for a promotional company.
You're a busy guy.
I try, you know, it's a lot of fun, so I'm always trying to keep myself busy.
Okay.
I'm sorry, what was your question?
Oh, I was going to ask you, how do people get a hold of you? Do you have a personal website that you want to give out?
Yes, definitely. EddieDuran.com, and that's E-D-D-Y, Duran, D-U-R-A-N.com. That's one website. The other website is DuranFilms.com. And the third is PaleBlueLight.com. PaleBlueLight is a TV series that we shot an episode, we shot a pilot for, and we're shopping that around. And it's PaleBlueLight.tv.
Perfect. Okay. Well, we're running out of time. I don't know if there's any last-minute tidbit that you want to share with everyone or any advice that you'd give for new directors before we go.
Well, go watch the film, please. Enjoy it. I'm sure you will enjoy it. Just go watch it. It's a great film, great cast, great production. I'm excited to go into the theaters and have a look at it. And if you have any questions for me, you can, at any of my websites, you can shoot me an email. And, I'm glad to hear from anyone and everyone.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, Eddie, for being with us. I'll let you get back to work. And when your next project comes out, we'll bring you back and talk some more.
Thank you very much. And it was a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, that was a great conversation with Eddie Duran. And I did want to give you a little information about his film. We mentioned that it's showing here in Miami and elsewhere, but I do have some specifics on the Miami locations. It will be opening at the AMC Aventura 24 in Miami, in Aventura, on September 6th. And it also opens up in Tampa at the AMC Veterans on September 6th. Now, you're going to have to Fandango or Google those locations and get the specifics. But it looks like it is opening here in Florida on September 6th. So keep an eye out for it. I really enjoyed the film. Like I said, it was very well done. And what made it so interesting is all of the research that had to have gone into it, including like I said, everything from the costumes to the names to just there's so many details. It was very detail-oriented, and it really made you think, and it made me want to go do some research because it seems like it's based on some little bit of truth in mythology and biblical references, kind of like Da Vinci Code. They kind of label this as 7 meets Da Vinci Code. Just like Da Vinci Code or any of Dan Brown's work, I always want to look things up because there's that ounce of truth in there that makes it so compelling. So I think this was a very well-done movie. There's so much to it, and I would definitely check it out, 36 Saints. Okay, guys, as always, thank you for listening to the show. And if you're a filmmaker out there and you'd like to be on my show, please contact me. My email address is ravenprods@yahoo.com. That's RavenProdus at yahoo.com. And please also like my Indie Streak page on Facebook. It's Indie Streak, just like this show, IndieStreak. And I post things about not only the shows, but also castings, events. A lot of it is Florida-based, but I do have things elsewhere as well because my audience is international. So I put up stuff from all over. Next week, I am going to be talking about the movie Teal Poppy, which I mentioned that Jeffrey De Serrano and Joey Dedio, who were in this film, 36 Saints, and also were the writers of this brilliant film, they are in Teal Poppy. So it'll be really an interesting crossover to talk to the director of that film, Rojas. I think I'm interviewing Fro. I'm not sure if I am or if I'm interviewing Joey yet, so I'm going to find that out. But do tune in next week, and I will talk to you guys then. Okay. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.